Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Pettum here as always. And of course, we're here to talk all things Astonville Football Club with a 3-3 draw at Villa Park against Brentford on a Saturday. Of course, you guys are hearing this on a hopefully very nice and springish Monday. I don't know if that's accurate for most UK weather based on what I've seen, and Simon shaking his head. That's a no, but here the snow finally has gone again. Hopefully it stays away here in Ontario, Canada, and hopefully more springish weather around the world. Regardless of that, anyways, this isn't the Weather Network or Weather Channel. Let's get to Mr. Simon O'Regan first. He's the only one here. I don't know why I said first. I'm already just messing this intro up. So Simon, save me. How's it going, my friend?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, just if you want to talk about the weather report, it's very, very short in England. It's windy and raining, and just put that on repeat for the next couple of months. But to more important things, not too bad. I mean, it's not been an ideal weekend in terms of results, but I'm not going to go down the route of so many experts that you see on social media and decide that it's been a complete disaster and write the season off. So, I'm still not doing too bad.
What are you talking about, Simon? The season's over. The next 5 years are over.
Honestly, I don't want to dwell on it, but some of the rhetoric that was on social media after that game last night was just fucking ridiculous. I think there's one tweet I saw this morning which summed it up perfectly. From someone who's obviously got the same sort of mindset that we've got, which was, did people just expect us to dance merrily through a daisy field towards the Champions League without any bumps in the road? Like, it's just absolutely ridiculous, to the overreaction. But I mean, that's nothing new. How many times have we come on and said this? But I'd like to think that on the whole cast and the majority of our listeners are more sensible.
Well, hopefully. The one thing I will say on it quickly, it's funny to me, and I don't want to throw anyone under the bus. If you feel that way, you're allowed to feel how you want to feel, fair enough. But to me, it just, like, it screams of entitlement. Sometimes I even have to catch myself, because I'll be completely honest, I really have not experienced Villa in this situation in my fandom. I know we've had all the ups and downs, and Simon has definitely had a lot of ups and downs, and I'm not cracking a joke, Simon, at your age or anything like that. But it's generally one of those things I do sit back and I look at and I think, yeah, it's annoying, but it's not the end of the world, and there's so much left to play for. And the fact that we are in this position, it's a privilege, and it's not.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that, because go back more than a few seasons now, what, 4 or 5 years? Look where we were. That's all I want to say on that.
Yeah, and with that point specifically, because sometimes when you raise that point, you'll get people detracting back, going, "Oh, you can't keep looking back. You know, that's a small way of looking at things." And there's a slight element of that which I think it is true. Like, you know, how long do you keep saying, "Look, we were X number of years ago," but at the same time, it's still, when you think, you know, this is our fifth season back in the Premier League after 3 years in the Championship, which was preceded by 5-6 years of being properly shit in the Premier League. To go from, finishing fifth in the Championship and getting up for the playoffs to being seriously challenging for Champions League football in 5 seasons, it is a big achievement. And especially when you think the time we went down was the worst possible time in terms of the money that came into the Premier League with TV deals. And then, so, you know, when we first came up, obviously, we, you know, spent a huge amount of money, which we had to just get a squad of players together. But then for the last few years, you know, we have spent decent money, but that's playing catch up with teams like West Ham, like, let alone the, you know, Man United and Chelsea, who have spent literally billions and like it's got them nowhere. The last few years, really, you've almost been trying to play catch up with kind of your mid-table 7th to 10th teams, especially. So to be where we are is unbelievable. But it's you know, some of the negative reactions now after games on the weekend, it's the sort of catch-22 in a way of being playing well raises expectations. You know, the start of the season, to be fair, I mean, at the start of the season, I kind of thought we'd finish around 6th, possibly 5th. I don't think any Villa fan, honestly, like, well, unless they're the most optimistic, you wouldn't have started the season thinking, come April with 7 games to go, we'd still be joint, you know, we'd be joint 4th and be with a real shout of Champions League football. So with that raised expectation, I think sometimes you do need to have a reality check. And that's not to say you excuse things when they go badly wrong, but at the same time, a bit of fucking perspective, really.
Well, that's the thing. I think after Newcastle away on the opening day, that loss, adding Buendia's injury, and no, I'm not bringing this up to have a massive discussion about it, but
yeah,
Mings going off to losing him for the season, I can't think of many people at that time thinking we're going to be in the top 5. And again, that could be initial reaction just from that result, and we know what happened either, but just to say to people that say, looking back, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it keeps you humble, in my opinion. Look at where you've come from. Again, some clubs choose not to do that, not to name any, but it makes some arrogant pricks, in my opinion. But it keeps you humble. It keeps you honest. And you have to reflect. You reflect on your own life and certain things. So why wouldn't you do that with any team you support, with whatever sport? But regardless of that, ladies and gentlemen, of course, welcome to the Aston Villa 3, Brentford 3 review. We've got enough of that tangent out of the way, of course, just to break things down very quickly for those who may have missed the game or just want a little bit of a recap. Of course, Ollie Watkins opened the scoring in the 38th minute. Morgan Rodgers scored in the 46th. And then, well, we kind of know what happened. Villa just capitulated. Very Wolves, and I guess you could cast all the way back to Stoke City under Martin O'Neill days, with 3 goals being conceded in, I think, 9 minutes. Jorgensen, Mbeumo, and Vissa scoring for Brentford, but that man, Super Ollie Watkins, scoring in the 80th minute to keep things level, get the Villa a point. I mean, initial reaction, Simon, is it 2 points dropped? Is it a point gain? Where do you kind of sit with that?
I mean, it's definitely 2 points dropped. Like, you can't dress it up any other way. If you're 2-0 up at home to Brentford, you should be coming away with 3 points. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, one of the points, sort of hiding back to one of the points just made like a minute ago. You're allowed to criticise things that have gone wrong. You can't excuse something like that happening. Like, it was unacceptable the way we threw that away. But if to try and take a positive from it, at least they did have something about them to actually go and gain that point, and then kind of look like they looked like they were going to get that win in that last 10 minutes. So the fact that they at least rallied themselves enough to get the point and keep the run going of not losing back-to-back Premier League games this season, which I think is such an underrated sort of achievement, really, to be fair. And also, so that just on that point, you know, referring to some of the negative outcry from the game of calls of bottle jobs, like, no, there's a difference between getting, you know, having a bad performance or having a bad spell in games and, you know, dropping points where you shouldn't have. But, like, proper bottle jobs teams don't then rally back to get a point. And teams that have character don't lose back-to-back games. You know, it does show that there is something there. I think it's an element of sort of complacency that's coming to their game. and we've seen it a few times. You know, obviously, Watkins after the game, I don't know if you've seen his quotes, you know, talking about not having that sort of big team mentality to kill games off. Like, I like that they're at least acknowledging it. What would concern me is Watkins said that 2 months or a couple of months ago, whenever we played Luton away, and you know, we nearly caught that one up, at least managed to get the 3 points there. But after that game, he said the same thing. You know, we go 2-0 up, like we did at Old Trafford on Boxing Day, and then they get complacent. And so the concern, a legitimate concern I think you can have, is this was raised by the players a couple of months ago. So why is it still happening? And I do think that is something that does need to be addressed. But then at the same time, for the majority of these players, they're in a position that they've not been in before. And I think the closer you get to sort of the finish line and you can see the goal at the end of it, it might not even be a conscious thing that when you are 2-0 up and you know how important now every victory is going to be, I think that there is a sort of subconscious element of, okay, let's just sit back a bit, you know, try and keep things tight. The problem is when you do that, you've actually got to fucking do that and not do what we did. But the long-winded answer to your question is 2 points dropped for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think for 99.9% of the fan base, or maybe even you could be bold enough to say 100%, it wouldn't probably actually be that bold, would agree with that. And I do sit back and I look at it, and you are right, Simon, because there has been times in previous Villa teams under different management as well where we've been in winning possessions and just thrown it away. And every football fan has experienced that one way or another throughout their football supporting life. Fair enough. But I don't know what it is about since the start of 2024 with Villa. It just kind of seems like, not to say that they're not matching the momentum throughout a whole game, because that's very, very difficult to do, to keep up a very high intensity, and very, very few teams can do it. But it's just managing that game out. It's the first 15 or so minutes, usually, or 20 minutes in the second half. I can think of a few seasons ago, it was part of the first half traditionally that it felt like that. It just seems like certain elements of this Villa side have kind of gotten away from themselves, and they need to fix that very quickly. Now, we're in a very blessed position to have United absolutely screwing up every time that they have the chance to catch up to us, and Spurs almost fumbling a few times and have fumbled. So we're very lucky to have that lead and be within the top five still, because of course, now that we know Spurs are ahead of us based on goal difference, so there's still plenty to play for. And just to kind of read out the quotes from Ollie Watkins, because I did find a couple of them. He just said, it's frustrating. We lack that big team mentality where they kill games off, which is really disappointing. I'm not belittling my team. I'm part of it, which thank God he said that at the end, because how many people would have jumped on that? He was going against Villa. So thank God he worded that correctly. The other one that I found interesting, it's poor. It's really disappointing because we could have been a really massive 3 points. We've been up 2-0 up, or sorry, we've been 2-0 up against Manchester United away and conceded silly goals. We have done it here again today. Now, United fans probably don't like being grouped in with Brentford because, you know, they're the champagne of the globe in their minds. But regardless of that, Simon, we've established that it's 2 points thrown away. But again, we've also established that it's not the end of the world. So kind of going into things, looking forward, considering now we have Lille, Arsenal, and Lille again, and then the rest of the Premier League campaign and whatever happens in Europe. Do you think we're managing this correctly, given injuries with the squad, given fatigue? I mean, now Dougie Luiz as well is going to miss the next two Premier League games with a stupid challenge, but regardless of that, how do you kind of see it playing out that way? And yeah, take it away.
So in terms of like managing it, I think you'd have to say, well, yeah, we have, because we're in the quarterfinals of the Conference League, and up until 8 o'clock this evening, we were still fourth, and you know, we're still joint fourth. So I don't think it'll be hard to argue that we haven't been managing it correctly. And also, when you factor in, as the point you made there, the amount of injuries we've had, like, I don't really see any other, like, there's no games really that you can kind of look at and where we haven't won and think, well, we got that wrong with personnel. I know there's been a lot made of the team selection against Man City. Obviously, we sort of briefly talked about it. We were on the podcast, but I think the team that was pulled out in that game, I think the way it's been portrayed in some quarters is actually quite misrepresentative. Like, I've seen a lot of people, a lot of stuff sort of saying, oh, we rested a load of big players. But then you look at it and you go, well, really, who? I mean, obviously, Diaby started ahead of Bailey, but they've kind of switched that all season. Tielemans has kind of been in and out all season. The only one that you look at on the bench who was like the initial big, like, oh, okay, was Pau Torres. But as we discussed on Wednesday, second half of the season, he's had this sort of niggling injury. So you have to manage that. So, I think we've managed it reasonably well. And then going forward, the Luiz suspension is really fucking annoying. Obviously, McGinn being out for three games, and now you've got Dougie out. So that is a frustrating one. I just hope we just don't get any more injuries because I think we've managed all season in difficult circumstances at that time, but I don't think we can afford another big one. And I don't think as well, just on the injuries, it cannot be underestimated. And we said at the time, the loss of Kamara, like, I mean, when after that, when it was announced after the United defeat that he was out for the rest of the season, I kind of thought then that, well, that's our chances of top four done. But we've managed it well enough. But I saw a stat earlier on today that eight of the 12 games that Kamara has missed this season, we've conceded two or more goals in, and that cannot be a coincidence. I'm not saying that if he's in there that, we'd win every single one, we wouldn't concede any of them. But it cannot be underestimated. We saw the first couple of years back in the Premier League how desperate we were for a designated sort of holding defensive midfielder. And he's the only one in our squad like that, really. I mean, I suppose Iribunum is kind of like that, but he's so young. Like, it would be so unfair to expect him to fill Kamara's shoes. But I think that, he cannot be underestimated that. But in terms of the rest of the season playing out, I'm still confident that we will finish fourth and I think we'll win the Conference League as well. Now, there'll probably be people who would think I'm just being ridiculously, optimistic. But I genuinely do. I'd like to think that the manager and the players have shown enough that there's enough credit in the bank to sort of be able to say that with a relative degree of confidence. But, we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out, really.
Yeah, and that's kind of the tricky thing, again, with managing all this. I mean, when you're adding suspensions, like you said, McGinn, now he's back, and now you have Douglas Luiz, and maybe there's, if you want to put a positive spin on it, because I thought this, and I still do believe that extended break for McGinn is probably going to benefit him and Villa probably for the rest of the season, because
yeah.
The players in the middle of the pitch, the ones that run the most, probably need a little bit of a break. And maybe that benefits Dougie for the rest. It doesn't really come at the best time. But
no.
And again, now I am terrified to play this Arsenal side without Dougie and Kamara in the midfield. We'll have to wait and see how that one goes. And I don't want to comment too much on that because then I might get a little negative. But, I mean, you look at the midfield, it's constantly shuffled and, again, I think it's been like 10 odd games since we even had the same back line for two consecutive games, Simon. Do you think this is where some of these defensive kind of errors, goals being conceded is coming from? I know we discussed before and I mentioned and asked if you thought Pau Torres was playing injured, and I don't exactly expect you to answer that and say, oh yes, he is. It's not really a cop out. I personally just don't think he's playing to the same level, and maybe there's more going on because, of course, his minutes have been managed since he's been injured, what, probably a month odd ago now. But I mean, all of this change throughout the pitch, it can help and it can't be managed in certain situations. But when you're trying to get that defensive solidarity, manage a game out and just kind of run out the clock, unfortunately, we're kind of the, I guess, what's the best way to say it? Maybe the cause of our own issues, our own enemy at times. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people would agree if you're constantly having to change your back four, it's difficult to get that kind of cohesion. And the counter arguments that would be all the more professional players, they should be able to. But and that's such a sort of basic way of looking at things. It's not FIFA. Like you can't just swap personnel and expect everything to be okay. That's not to say that you excuse it again. Like none of this is saying that you can't be annoyed because because we're having to change. Like they should still be doing things better. You look at the goals we conceded. That all three of them were so bad, like really really poor goals. And that is individual errors. But it goes to the point you've got constantly changing back four, and the players in front of you are constantly changing. You're not having that protection that you kind of been used to. It's not the sole reason, but it's part of a number of different issues for that. And yeah, we kind of the it's weird because the way we play with the high line and playing out from the back, you'd if you were then to say, oh, they've caused their own problems there with the goals they've conceded, you'd assume that would come from giving the ball away, trying to play out from the back, or not getting the defensive line right. But these were all just crosses into the box that just weren't dealt with. Like that is just basic individual errors, basic defending, not tracking your man, not getting tight enough to your man, and not stopping the ball coming in as well. And that, but then with the two, I think the one cross is from their right side, and the other two are from the left. And you'd say, well, Konsa should be doing better blocking the cross, and he should. But he's a centre back, and I know he's performed very well at right back and on a number of occasions. But the fact is, he is a centre back, and it sort of links back to kind of having to chop and change and cope with the injuries again. Because if Matty Cash is fit, there's no way that back four lines up. It's Cash again at home to Brentford. That is going to be Cash right back with Cons and Torres in the middle. These things all kind of add up and all add to what's going on. But that's not to say that the players can't be and shouldn't be doing more. To just the basics and concentration.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly, my opinion, that Mbeumo goal is the one that drove me nuts the most, because the fact that it's that low of a cross and he's able just to, he just put his foot out. He had no clue if he's going to get anything on it, to be honest. And it was quite fortunate, but it just, that many bodies that goes through, even I think the Vissa one as well. It is annoying and it does happen. But you are right when you bring up Ezri Konsa, because I was having a discussion. Maybe it was with you. I can't even remember who I was talking to this morning about this, or maybe another group chat I'm in. But it was discussed with about Ezri Konsa and how well he can play at right back. But it's typically in one or two games in a row, and then you kind of have to rotate it because I feel like it gets figured out very quickly. And not to throw a lot of well, no hate, but a lot of criticism at Ezri Konsa in particular. He's not a slow center back whatsoever, but I feel like at times you just want someone with a little bit more pace, and not to say that Matty Cash is this prime right back, because let's be honest, some of his best defending is kamikaze defending, and we don't know what's going to happen. But I think it's just that kind of change up, and what it gives you is so different that when you're trying to cope with it, and unfortunately, it's just the way it has to be with Cash still out, and hopefully he is back soon and can stay fit and hopefully in some form for the rest of the season when he does come back. I do sit back and I look at it, and especially even, for example, going into Arsenal, I almost feel like I would prefer Konsa at right back. But now that it's been such a string of games, I almost feel like it has to be changed a little bit. But then again, that goes against the whole argument of having a consistent back four too. So, and I mean, even if you look at the left back situation, Moreno's had a horror show for a while now, and just really since basically coming back hasn't really been the same player. Luka Dean's had a fantastic season, but you need to rotate that as well. So it's kind of this unfamiliar balancing act that we're honestly just not used to. We've seen in the past, Simon, haven't we, where things have changed out of necessity through injury in previous years, and that's all well and good. But when you're adding in Europe, for example, it's just a whole different beast. And I kind of wonder as a fan base, and we've kind of discussed this before, but I think as a fan base, we're just not used to that mentality because it's been so long. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think we've obviously having the European campaign this season, like you always then going to have to rotate and that's what you want. You know, you want to be able to have the options to do that. I think where the problem that we've had where we've come unstuck, and it's, you know, I hate to go back to it again, but it's the amount of injuries that we've constantly had, because there's no way that we'd be going 10 games you know, in a row without naming the same back four, you know, in any of those games consecutively. But we've literally, it seems like every other game there's a suspension or an injury or something that means you've got to just change everything around again. As I say, if Cash was fit, he's definitely starting a right back on Brentford, and then you probably go to Arsenal and you probably would see Konsa with the back, with then Carlos coming into the middle with Torres, just to, you know, make it have you a bit more solid, because they obviously have different sort of attributes in that area. But yeah, so it's the, in terms of the rotation thing, and I'm the squads, there is that point that some Villa fans, I think, are probably needed to change their mindset about, which does come, you know, back to your point of, because we haven't been, you know, in Europe for so long. And if you want to be challenged at the top, you need to have that squad. You know, when I remember when Tielemans signs, and I think most people thought, okay, oh God, what a great signing. But then you did see some comments going, oh, so who's he replacing, Luiz or Kamara? And it's like, it's no signings like that coming in. It's not to replace someone in the team, because I think, to be honest, I think the concept of a best 11, I don't know if that really exists anymore, because it depends on who you're playing and if you're home or away, like, and the games you've got coming up as well. Like, and if you want to be seen as a serious, you know, team that challenges in, you know, to play in the Champions League and at the top end of the table, if you're in a position where you've got an absolute nailed on best 11, then that's worrying, because that means the rest of your squad players are nowhere near, you know, aren't good enough to be playing for you, which is, that's not what the best teams do.
We've experienced, you know, that in the past, haven't we?
We have. And, you know, you look at the top three at the moment, and then if they've got, like, you know, fully fit, whatever 11 they put out, you look at their bench and go, Jesus, every one of them are getting to our team. Like, you need to get yourself up to that. So the rotation elements, in an ideal world, we'd be able to rotate, you know, on our terms. But unfortunately, for a lot of this season, we've had to rotate, but in ways that I don't think we would have wanted to.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about Morgan Rogers. I feel like this has become a little bit of a Morgan Rogers podcast, or at least it's been a theme on this podcast for the last few weeks now, or maybe even a month. I can't remember exactly. But of course, gets off the mark finally for Villa, scores his first Villa goal. And I mean, it was very well taken. The little shimmy shake. It was very Jacob Ramsey-esque, I will say that. he does, and I said this last week, I think, as well, he does remind me of Jacob Ramsey in terms of how he moves with the ball. And I do love that. You can tell it's a very classy player. Everyone's now saying, coming out of the woodworks, so, oh, I see why we bought him. Yeah. Let's keep that to ourselves and maybe not bring that up too much. But regardless of that, I mean, how massive do you think that goal was for him? Of course, assist in the previous game against City, a big week for him. I mean, it's easy to say, sit back and say, Simon, that he deserves a run in the team. But I mean, we have to sit back and say he deserves a run in the team because he's been so good.
Yeah. I mean, his first sort of couple of games for us when, you know, he was coming on and getting minutes, you could see that, you know, he was raw and young and inexperienced and has a lot to learn. He's still got an awful lot to learn. But for me, anyway, I could see, okay, this he's got something about him. And obviously, I think that's 4 games in a row now. I think he started in the league for us. And he's kind of, you can see him growing. Obviously, last week against Wolves, I thought he was, you know, really, really good, especially in the first half. And I totally agree with you. And I thought the same thing, actually, when I was watching that first half against Wolves. The way he runs the ball is reminiscent to Ramsey, like that, the sort of powerful running, which we've, let's not forget, another bloody injury player we basically missed all season. But yeah, with Rodgers, the goal was lovely. Like, it was such a good goal. I thought the pass from Tielemans was great. The touch and, you know, that sort of swivel touch turn was excellent. With the finish as well, sort of go back on himself. A lot of people have opened the body up and sort of tried to curl it into that far post. But I thought it was such a clever finish. And it's a shame that it's kind of got lost in the, you know, the way the rest of the game played out, really. You know, if that game finishes 2-0 or 3-0, you'd have a lot more people talk, oh, what a great goal from Rodgers. But I like the look of him. And yeah, you know, I think, and there might be a few people maybe deleting a few tweets from that they sent back in January. And, you know, I said at the time, if he's good enough for Unai Emery, he should be good enough for all of us. And again, you know, the people seemed furious at spending £8 million on a player. That's another tangent that we don't need to go on for once we won't go off on a tangent like that. But no, with Rodgers, yeah, it's 21 years old to jump from a team that were sort of mid to the bottom end of the Championship to a team that are in the top four in the Premier League is a big leap for an experienced player, let alone a kid. And I think he's equipping himself really, really well. And I think getting to the assist in midweek, getting that goal as well, because he's had a couple of decent chances in some of his early games that, you know, he's maybe not had the composure that you'd want. But I'd say that's to be expected with, you know, the young player. Now he's got that first one and he's improving with, but, you know, you can see him, he's looking more comfortable now with the run of games, which, again, you'd expect that to happen with players. I mean, with Ramsey unfortunately out for the rest of the season, you know, we're going to need Rodgers. I don't think he'll necessarily start every game from now to the end of the season, but I think he'll have a big role to play in how the season ends up for us.
Massively. And the one thing that, it, even though I kind of mentioned it about his goal and how well that he kind of made his moves in the box, it's one thing to score and it be a little bit fortunate, or you just kind of take a shot. There's no real kind of block in front of you or anything like that. But the fact that he basically took on 2 players and still slotted at home and had that composure, that is something completely different. That wasn't luck or anything like that. So I think that's when a lot of people now, especially with, like you said, Simon Ramsey out for the rest of the season, which is massively unfortunate. And I mean, he's just been absolutely tragically unfortunate since he got injured last summer. And hopefully he comes back fit and firing next season. I mean, there's going to be a lot of speculation in the summer with him because of potential sales that might need to happen. We'll have to wait and see how true any of that actually is. But I mean, it was the perfect purchase now when you think about it for that fee. And it was definitely well timed because if we didn't have Morgan Rogers right now and not Aaron Ramsey, sorry, Jacob Ramsey was out for the rest of the season. I mean, people were toxic yesterday about throwing away 2 points. Oh my bloody North. That's all I can say. That was a very English thing for me to say, and I'm not English. So I do apologize if you found that cringy, but that's all I could think of at this point in time. But anyways, let's talk about Super Ollie Watkins, because if we don't talk about him once in a podcast when he's actually played a game of football, then we're not a true Villa podcast, are we? I mean, I noticed a few interesting stats, and of course, that came from AVFC Stato. So thank you to him for providing those. Of course, he set a new record yesterday, of course, being Saturday, that he broke Villa's non-penalties goal record in a single Premier League campaign. So of course, he has 18 this season. Dwight York and Benteke, of course, both were tied on 16. Dwight York had 15 previous to that in the 95-96 season. And yeah, I mean, that's one hell of a record, but it gets even better there, Simon, because of course he has 28 goal contributions this season, which I think is a record in itself as well, with 18 goals and 10 assists. You go through previous campaigns, of course, his first season, he had 19 goal contributions, 14 goals, 5 assists. The season after, he dipped down, 11 goals, 2 assists. And of course, last season, 21 goal contributions with 15 goals, 6 assists. I mean, he is Mr. Reliable. We can count on him when we need him most, and that's what any team needs. But I mean, Simon, this is a tough question to answer, and it is one of the Twitter poll questions, and we'll get to it, to what other people have kind of voted on and mentioned later. But is there a fair shout to say that Ollie Watkins is potentially the best striker that Villa has had, maybe even in this millennia?
Well, so if you're talking from sort of 2000 onwards, I mean, it's not a great deal of people that you could probably really, rival. I think it's definitely an opinion that I think you can make a strong argument for. I mean, for me, if you're talking Premier League era, you'd like top three strikers for me. You're talking Dwight York, Benteke, and Ollie Watkins. Like, and then it's difficult to compare the three of them if you're looking at, because you look at the team that Benteke was playing in at Villa was a fucking awful Aston Villa team. Like, it was surrounded by some real bad players, and he was. For those three seasons, I mean, he was unbelievable. To get the number of goals he did in a team like that, you can't sort of just ignore that. And then you look at Watkins, and I think for me, what if you were to take that position that he's saying that the best striker we've had in the Premier League era, I think the biggest feather in your cap in that argument is the assists. Like, that's a huge thing to get the amount of assists that he gets every season. I think is impressive for a striker who's also getting the amount of goals that's comparable to them. I mean, like, sort of you're looking like Dwight York. I'd probably still say York was the best, because I mean, York was just he was an outstanding footballer. Not just for Villa, the year after he left, he wins the treble with Man United. So I think you'd be hard. I don't think I could go with Watkins above him at the moment. And also, York won two League Cups with Villa. So I think then Watkins, if Villa win a trophy, whatever that trophy is, well, Watkins is at the club as well. That definitely, I think, pushes him up into the proper arguments. And I think if he breaks Gabby's goal scoring records, which I suspect he will achieve probably by the end of next season, the rate he's going, then I think then you'd I don't think then you could argue against that being the case. But I don't know if I'd say he's the best. Purely because it is so difficult to compare three strikers from three kind of different eras as well. But he's certainly involved in that conversation, and I think you can make an argument for that would be a strong, like, good argument that you might not be able to argue back against. But he's unbelievable. Like, he's, and I still think it's ridiculous actually how underrated he is by so many people. Like, the fact that there's even conversations that will he go to the Euros with England, it completely blows my mind. And I know, like, sometimes as Villa fans, we can be a little oversensitive in terms of not getting credit and, you know, being overlooked, even though I do think that both those things do happen as well. But there's no one can tell me if Watkins was at Tottenham or Man U this season and he had still individually scored 18 goals and got 10 assists, it wouldn't even be a question to anyone about whether he should be going to the Euros or not. I do genuinely think there's an element of the club he plays for which clouds people's opinions, but I think he's the second best centre forward in the Premier League, and I would argue that with anyone until the cows come home. Like, there's no one, he's behind Haaland. No one can convince me there's a better centre forward in the league. So that rules out the Salah or, you know, any debates like that. But no, I think he's outstanding. You could see when he first came in all those years ago, you know, Dean Smith brought him in that first season, you could see, you know, okay, he's a good player. I didn't personally, I thought he'd be a good Premier League striker for us. I'll be honest, I didn't think his game would raise to the level it has, which obviously great, huge credit to Emery, the coach and staff, and to Watkins himself for having that desire to keep working hard and keep improving. But I don't think there's another centre forwards in playing in Europe that Villa could realistically sign that would be better than Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, the stats, like I did say before, they are the proof in the pudding. And it's not to say it's incredibly young, because it's only a year younger than me, but he's only 28. He's in the prime of his career.
Yeah. And
with the way that professional footballers are now, that prime could be 5 more years. It's, yeah, you never really know. If that's all at Villa, I mean, hopefully it's this every season. I think he's on 58 Premier League goals, and I think Gabby's on 74, I do believe, if I'm thinking correctly.
Yeah. So
he should beat that by next season, because I would expect him to get a few more goals at least this campaign with, what, 6 games left to play in the league.
Yeah. And I hope he gets more, but I hope he gets at least 2.
Yeah,
so that we finally had to centre forwards with 20 Premier League goals. Aston Villa, we've had, I think York, Angel and Benteke maybe might have had seasons where they got 19. So yeah, I'd love him to sort of finally, like, break that record as well. And yeah, I agree. He undoubtedly, when you think he signed a new 5-year deal as well, there's unless he gets a career-ending injury, which obviously everyone hopes doesn't happen, I can't see any way that he doesn't break that record. And who's to say he may not end up getting 100 Premier League goals, but he's on 58 in 4 seasons. So, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that, what, another 3 seasons maybe it takes to reach 100 Premier League goals for Villa, which would be, that would be some achievement. But, you know, that's obviously, that's it. That's in the future. That's something. Maybe in 3 seasons' time, we can have a special Ollie Watkins 100 goal podcast where we go back and look at every single goal and talk about them.
Well, I don't know if we want to do every single goal. Maybe we'll do his best bits, because we could be here for a very long time. But no, you are right, Simon. It would be nice to see him reach that, because for one thing, and the most important thing, the fact that he would be at the top of that list mean Villa are doing well, you would think. And again, to be the top goal scorer in the Premier League era, to actually be an out-and-out striker, that's another thing. He would do it in a lesser time than Gabby did. Of course, Gabby was at the club for roughly around a decade. So to do that in a lesser time as well, just again, it just means good things are happening to this football club, and that's
and he's all just very lastly on Watkins as well. Let's not forget he's still got a good chance of getting the golden boots this season.
Yeah,
Haaland stopped scoring 19. Watkins is second on 18. Like there's every chance that he finishes this season as the Premier League top goal scorer.
Speak it into existence, Simon. Let's do. Imagine.
And he still would be and nowhere near the shortlist for PFA Player of the Year. Which you look at the odds on that. I don't know if you've seen it. Like it's odd. It's scandalous that a player with the amount of goal contributions he's had this season, like he's not even in any sort of, he's not even an outsider. Like he's so far, like odds wise, off it. And like you look at some of the players above him on that list. But again, it comes back to my point of that. I do think there's an issue that amongst certainly the media and pundits, that Aston Villa just don't seem to exist, as Jamie Redknapp showed tonight as well. But let's move on because I'll go into the 10-minute rant.
Well, they'll give that award to Mason Mount for doing nothing in this season, then they will, just because he plays for United, then they will give it to Ollie Watkins for getting, like, even if he got, say, 22 goals. To be honest, and this isn't me being arrogant, I think he has a hat-trick in him before the end of the season. Yeah. I feel like there's one more big score coming, at least.
He likes scoring against Arsenal, doesn't he?
He can put up the three instead of the two. Yeah. He can do the Liverpool three from all those seasons ago. I mean, if we scored three against this Arsenal side, it's meant to be. That's Jesus. All I can say. Because as much as they do annoy me as well, they have an incredible defense, and you do have to acknowledge that. But regardless of that, let's get over to the Twitter polls. Of course, you can interact and vote with these. It's at HoltCastPod on Twitter/X. I have to decide on what I want to call it these days, because you say that you tweet still, but it's called X. I don't know. It's just a weird branding decision, whatever trademark thing they've decided to do. But anyways, of course, as always, for every Monday pod, we ask you three questions over on that social media platform, and we want you to vote. So the first question, of course, I do ask this quite often, but of course things change, opinions change, so I do like to see where people are at from kind of a maybe a bi-weekly thing or a monthly thing at least. First question was, where will Aston Villa finish? Of course, the options were fourth, fifth, or sixth. Simon, where are you sitting on this currently?
I'm still going fourth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, fifth was the winner, outstandingly, by 74.6%. So that's probably a lot of reactionary from the 355 people that did vote to that, thinking, you know what, Spurs just jumped ahead and that's it. But maybe they're thinking more like Jamie Redknapp is at the moment just for this night. Hopefully they wake up and come to their senses. But of course, 19.4% in second place was fourth spot. And of course, there's 5.9 negative people, or 5.9% negative people in this vote that think we're going to get sixth. I honestly just put that in there because I felt like if I didn't put it in there, I would get a few comments saying, "Oh, you're being arrogant." So, anyways, you have to appeal to the masses, or you're just a knobhead, apparently, at least on social media. The next question was, and of course we just discussed this, is Ollie Watkins the best striker Aston Villa have had in the last 20 years? I slightly tweaked it for Simon, but regardless of that, that was the question I asked for this one. 82.2% of people said yes. 17.8% said no. I'm not shocked with that. I think Simon's probably going to go with yes, but just to reconfirm that, Simon, how would you vote on that?
I'd say yes, but I could have very easily said no because Ben Tech, you know, I think you've got to respect that. But yeah, I'll go with yes because maybe that some way, if I think that he is the best, he'll get a shitload more goals to prove that right.
If we could get some kind of weird, like, time warp machine, time traveling machine, and put Benteke in it to prime Benteke and bring him into this side, sign him on a free.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. to have two of them, that would make me very too excited. Inappropriate things would be said on this podcast. But regardless of that, let's get to the best question. Of course, the third and final one, which is the best fruit? The options were apple, banana, Blueberry, and then the other one, of course, was Other. And we did have, I think, one person at least comment on that. I haven't really looked. Tim Weiss said Strawberry was his vote. But what is your favorite slash what is the best fruit, I guess I should say, Simon?
Oh, see, this is it's an awkward one for me because I don't eat any fruit.
You unhealthy man.
Well, no, it's I can have them in smoothies and like drink. Like, I like the flavors, but it's I don't know what it is. And there must be some name for whatever this is. But like biting into like an apple, an orange, or banana, like the flat, I don't like the flesh of the fruits.
Is it like the juiciness of it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I eat grapes, so I probably have to go other than grapes. Like, I know, yeah. But yeah, no, I like the flavor of an orange. I like the flavor of an apple in liquid form. Like, it has an orange juice and apple juice, but the actual eating it itself, no, I don't do that. But so I eat lots of vegetables to make up for it, if anyone's worried.
So you do eat fruit because you eat grapes then?
Yeah, grape, but literally that's the only one that I would actually eat. As a solid.
That's funny though, because that's like the most sour you could argue of what you just said. So
I know,
must,
yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you had maybe, some weird PTSD as a baby or something and that you just don't recall.
Or maybe just because like, if I'm in the grapes subconsciously, I think, well, this turns into wine.
Well, that's an Alcoholics Anonymous question, but regardless of that, of course, 40.8. percent of people, apparently I can't read percentages ever, said banana. Second place was apples at 33.8, blueberries got 13.1, and 12.3% said other, but only one person actually specified. So I always find that interesting, but anyways, thanks to Tim Weiss for getting involved in that one. I should actually read out a few questions comments on the Ollie Watkins poll voting, because there was a couple that actually made good statements. Jim Groves said Benteke carried a poor Villa side for two seasons. I would have loved to see what he could have done with top class players around him. I mean, Jim, wouldn't we all? Jesus Christ, because as Simon correctly said earlier on, there was some, well, he didn't say it like this, but there was some absolute dog shit in that side. Let's be brutally honest. Thanos.gi says, I believe Carew and Gabby were more talented, but he is by far the hardest worker, not just in the team.
Sorry, did he just say Carew and Gabby were more talented?
That's what he thinks, yeah. And then he goes on to say, but he is by far the hardest worker just in the, not just in the team, but maybe in the Premier League. I remember when Gabby was frightening for opponents. Benteke was also a beast. He could make a goal out of nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that Gabby was more talented. So Gabby had a good sort of few years.
And then he kind of let's be honest.
Yeah, I think Watkins is more talented. Charlton Carew, like Carew, in terms of pure talent, like would be right up there. But the problem with Carew is it was only when he felt like it. But I mean, I love John Carew. So, you know, he can do no wrong in my eyes.
Well, we'll have to see if other people feel the same way. But regardless of that, I think it is an interesting debate because it does kind of, again, it's one of those things where people say, oh, sure, look at the past. But again, we're looking at the past here. You can look at the numbers. You can look at a variety of things. I think a lot of people are going to pick certain players with certain moments, and that kind of weighs heavier. I mean, wait till Ollie Watkins hopefully is leaving this club when he retires, or he just literally falls off a cliff at like 35 and we just don't need him anymore. Maybe we can ship him off to a nice loan deal until he wants to retire or something like that. But I feel like once he leaves Villa, people are going to become more reflective. And then it's one of those things as well.
You always like, with players, like a Carew or Benteke, it's in the years after they've left, you only remember all the great, you remember their great moments, and you romanticize like the nostalgia of it. So yeah, you always tend to be more appreciated after you've gone as well. But that's why it's difficult doing comparisons of players, especially when one of them is a current player, I think. But yeah, he's definitely up there.
Yeah, and the one thing I will say quickly about Benteke, and I just kind of thought of this now, and I don't know, maybe it's not really that true, but I kind of think he left at the perfect time, considering everything that went on afterwards. And when you look at the rest of his career in the Premier League, of course, it didn't work out at Liverpool. That was evident. And then he was at Palace for a good while. That was his longest spell in the Premier League with one club. And he had a few seasons where, I guess, not to say Palace aren't a noticeable club, but of course, you're not being paid attention to like he would have been at Liverpool, of course. And maybe even more so at Villa because he just kind of came onto the scene out of nowhere, but he just never reached that consistency or anywhere near it ever again. There's a variety of factors you could attribute that to, but you do have to sit back and look at it and think maybe if he did stay for a few more seasons, maybe it did get worse and we think differently of him. But again, that's just another argument we can throw into that. But anyways, let's get over to this.
So, you know, hence me getting a yellow card for saying I think you've had juggling balls for Christmas.
And of course, it's time for every Villa fans and probably every football fan's favorite game. I don't know if you want to say that, but I'm just going to say that to be arrogant. Of course, it is Dean Smith's juggling six. We did talk about Morgan Rogers earlier on in this episode. And I feel like Simon, I can't see your face right now because I'm looking at a different screen. But he's probably looking at me thinking, what the hell am I going to guess here? But of course, Morgan Rogers has actually played for, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in his very young career. He's only 21, and he's been at 7 teams, with 3 of those being on loan and 4 being permanent deals. So, Simon, can you be very respectful and pay tribute to Dean Smith, even though he has nothing to do with Morgan Rogers, and name 6 of the 7 teams Morgan Rogers has been a part of? I won't say played for, because technically there's 2 teams at 0, but he was a part of that team in his senior career at least. So we're changing and tweaking this slightly. But again, like I said, this was a last minute thing. I did my best, so don't hate me too much. So I will give you 3 chances to get it wrong. I think that's fair for this one. Let's see how you do. So Morgan Rogers, have a go.
Okay, so we've got Villa.
Correct.
Middlesbrough.
Correct.
Man City.
Correct.
West Brom.
Correct. There you go. You got 4 out of 6. So now you just have the loans.
Oh, God.
And that's why I gave you 3 lives. I feel like one you'll get.
Is Lincoln one?
Correct. That was the one I thought you would get. He made 25 appearances during the 2021 campaign and scored 6 goals.
Yeah, he's on loan there with, there's another player's name, I cannot remember at all, but there's another loan. I think Brennan Johnson, he was on loan with Lincoln at the same time. Brennan Johnson was on loan there. And
yeah, I think they went to the League One playoffs that season. I'm thinking correctly, I could be wrong.
But I mean, I'm going after that. Like, I've got nothing. Like, you're going to have some sort of clue.
I'll give you a hint on both of these. So one of the clubs is currently in the Premier League, but they weren't at this point in time.
Okay.
And the second one has been in the Championship. Well, I think maybe it was even as of last season, or at least within the last 2 seasons, but are now back in League One.
Okay. So it's a Premier League club now, but they weren't at the time, so that could only be within the last 4 or 5 years, I'd say.
And just to kind of give you a quick reminder, you only have to get 1 of the 2 now. You're actually in really good shape. Okay. I didn't think you were good. I thought you were going to get it Lincoln, but I think maybe after getting 1 or 2 wrong. So
I'll have a stab at Sheffield United.
That is incorrect.
Okay.
So you have 2 more chances. 2 more chances to get something wrong, which is still pretty good shape.
Brentford?
Correct.
Oh, God. Okay.
Now is the tricky part, because you don't know if you should go for the other team and prioritize that. I wanted to back you into that corner.
Yeah, no. I couldn't even think of what Premier League team is now in League One. I don't know if I want to go that route. The team that's in League One, how long ago were they in the Premier League, out of interest? Was it a while ago?
No, they were in the Championship.
Oh, Champion. Oh, sorry, yeah, Champion. So
if I said Premier League, I do apologize. Actually, technically, they've been in the Premier League, but it's been probably 14 years, 15 years.
Okay.
don't know why I just gave you that hint, because I feel like that's just giving it away massively. Actually, not really, but it kind of did.
Oh, God. Wigan?
Incorrect. So Dean Smith, again, has won for, I think, a second week in a row. I mean, Dean Smith always wins. In
I mean, I don't think I've done too badly there.
No. Again, I thought you would get the Lincoln, but maybe after a few wrongs. So you did very well there. Of course, during the 21-22 season, he went on loan to Bournemouth. He made
Bournemouth,
scoring one goal. The 2023 okay. campaign, he was on loan and made 20 appearances for Blackpool, scoring one goal.
Yeah. I mean, like, I knew obviously he was our West Brom academy and that Man City got him, so I knew them, and I knew that he'd been on loan at Lincoln and done really well there. But I mean, it just took me a couple of seconds to remember that they was Lincoln, but I didn't even know that he'd been on loan anywhere else. So I was shocked to hear that he had three loan spells, to be honest. So,
see, when I said
stabs in the dark.
When I said a Premier League side within the last 14, 15 years, or like that yeah. long ago, I thought, oh no, he might think Blackpool, because like the amount of teams that have really dropped down to League One is probably what? Wigan, Sunderland, Bolton, Blackpool, and that's all I can think of off the top of my head right now.
I don't know where like Charlton even are. Or,
I think they're in League One as well right now. I guess there's a number of
you know, Bradford's, and like, there's a number of Premier League teams that sit down there. So yeah, true. I mean that's going to be tough, but yeah. I'm happy to have got five.
And again, Dean Smith does applaud you all the way from Charlotte, Jeez, USA. Dean. I'm sure he does. And of course, maybe some people will say it's not fair because technically he didn't make an appearance for West Brom or Man City, but technically Wikipedia is naming it as part of his senior career. He was part of that yep. club. So don't hate on us. This was some hard researcher for 5 minutes. And you know what? I think it was a decent game, but you know what? Let's leave things there. I'm not sure how long this recording was, but I'm sure in typical Holtcast fashion, it was more than long enough. So thank you all for listening. And of course, thank you to Mr. Simon O'Regan for joining me. Find him on X at Cy O'Regan. You can tweet the team at Holtcast Pod. Of course, if you want to email us to just say how much you love the podcast, send something in you want us to read out and share Villa-wise. Maybe it's a player you met in a strange area or something like that, a funny Villa-related story. Of course, you can email us, holtcast@gmail.com. We should be back right after the game against Lille at Villa Park on Thursday. I think Mr. Sebastian Bacon should be joining me for that, at least that I know of, because he sent me a voice memo today saying he's committing to that. So let's see if that happens, ladies and gentlemen. If there's not an episode, you'll know he bailed on me. But regardless of that, Seb, if you are listening, I do apologize, and I threw you under the bus. But regardless, we will leave it there. And don't forget, up the Villa.